Chapter 3. The Maharshi. The facts to be gleaned about him are sparse and meagre, but full of interest by reason of their rare simplicity. I have been fortunate enough to obtain two photographs of the Maharshi sitting in different postures in deep meditation. One of these accompanies my brief jottings. It is no use writing to me for further details. I am publishing all I am permitted to make known. How the call came. A chela whom I know told me this story. When the Maharshi was 16 years old, he had the true awakening. But he continued to live with his parents until the crisis, which came on August 29, 1896. That day, seeing Maharshi sitting cross-legged and abandoning himself to meditation, his elder brother rebuked him, hinting that one who wished to live like a sadhu had no right to a home life. Maharshi left home leaving a note. He started off in obedience to the call, which was from Arunachala. He lived in the Arunachaleshwara temple and other places before he chose to live in the cave where Frank saw him. He is about 39 years old and has lived in the cave now for many years. How he spent time in the cave. After the first 2 years, he lapsed into silence. For years, he never spoke a word. There was no fanaticism in this, except a disinclination to be engaged in conversation. He has been speaking and teaching for the last 6 years. He speaks the languages of southern India and English. He knows the most important part of the Hindu scriptures by heart and is well acquainted with Christian history and Bible times. Not many know his name or anything more about him than the story of leaving his home, which he has himself told to his chelas, and that he is a Brahmin by birth. His personality is the striking thing about him, and strange stories are told by credible witnesses. For example, a Hindu version of Gideon and his fleece. One year, during the early days of the monsoon, the Maharshi was sitting at the foot of the mountain in the open air in deep meditation. A certain woman, known to the narrator, had gone to take him an offering and to ask for his blessing. On the way, she was caught in a heavy cloudburst and sheltered under a rock or tree about 300 yards from where he was seated. She saw him sitting wrapped in meditation all the time. When the rain was over, she went up to him and found that all around him, for the space of about 50 yards, the ground was completely dry. The Mahatma who caused the Maharshi to break his 12 years silence. No understanding of the Maharshi is possible without knowing the details of his relationship with Ganapati Shastriyar. See International Psychic Gazette for June. One day, Shastriyar came to him and spoke in Sanskrit verse, and the 12 years silence was broken. That is 6 years ago, and the Maharshi has been speaking and teaching ever since. Shastriyar, so to speak, embodies the intellectual aspect of mastership and the Maharshi the devotional. Nevertheless, Shastriyar is highly devotional and the keenness of the Maharshi's intellect is indisputable. What Shastriyar himself always says is, "It is not I, but the Maharshi who does these things." He evidently regards himself as the Maharshi's instrument, as the wielder of the power generated by this greatest of living Mahatmas. But this must not be taken too literally. It is merely a deduction from the facts regarded as a whole. It is noteworthy how immediately the devotional man recognized the intellectually developed man, and how the latter instantly yielded to the sway of the meditative saintly devotee. When Shastriyar was approaching the foot of the mountain with Frank, on the occasion of Frank's first visit to the Maharshi, he made two prophecies, one of which has been fulfilled and the other awaits the time of fulfillment. As they came close up to the mountain, Shastriyar said, "Hush, we must be quiet now. We are drawing near him." Shastriyar has a subtle sense of humor. Once Frank asked a question about a past incarnation. Shastriya looked at him and said, "Wait for 2 full months and I will tell you all your past incarnations with full details." For a moment, Frank was very pleased. Then he realized the Mahatma was teasing him. And Shastriya laughed gently in his inimitable way and murmured, "What good? What good would it be?" Shastriya's learning. Once Shastriya felt spiritually called to go and teach Sanskrit in a small town. He went. There was a vacancy in the school and he applied for it. Said the authorities, "How do we know that your Sanskrit is good Sanskrit?" Immediately, Shastriya went up north to Banaras, passed the severest tests, took the highest degrees, returned with his certificates to the little town, showed them to the people and then tore them to shreds and threw them away. A well-known Sanskrit scholar says that you can give Shastriya any subject at random and he will walk up and down a few minutes and then reel off Sanskrit verses perfect in form and sense faster than you can write them down dealing with the chosen theme. Shastriya's clairvoyance and psychic gifts. A man was sent to find out if Shastriya was a seditionary. He found him in a cave sitting in meditation. The man was in disguise and said he revered Shastriya and wished to become his chela. Shastriya received the visitor with kindness and put him a few questions. The man had been primed and answered readily. Thus they sat for some little while and Shastriya fell again into meditation. The man had come straight on his mission, so there was no means by which Shastriya could have received news of his coming. He had put Shastriya no questions and had merely posed as a prospective chela. Then Shastriya said, "You come from such and such a town. You want to find out if I am a seditionary. Why did you tell me untruths?" The man owned up and eventually became Shastriya's chela. Shastriya has 12 special chelas. To each, he has entrusted the subject he is best fitted to expound. On one occasion, he enumerated the subjects to a chela, asking him to choose. This the chela did. On looking up, he detected a quiet smile on the master's face, which told him that he knew beforehand which it would be. Another time, Shastriya said, "England, France, Germany, Italy, America. I go everywhere." Such things are said simply, without a suspicion of boasting, as mere statements of fact. Shastriya was asked, "Could a man remain in perpetual meditation? Could he keep his eyes open so long?" Shastriya said yes. Then he was watched day and night for a week, during which time he never closed his eyes. If you look at the Maharshi's photo, you will see that the eyes are open. Yet he is sunk in deep meditation and oblivious to all in the outer world. Those who have slept in the cave with the Maharshi say that practically he never sleeps at all. How the Maharshi answers the curious. When people ask questions out of sheer curiosity, he will remain a little while in concentration and will say, "I have not received authority from God to answer this question." Or he may reply, "You say I want to know. Tell me who is that I. Know first that I and then you will know everything." But in the case of those seeking spiritual light, he is most able and willing to argue any point for the sake of explanation. With both these men, it is invariably the same. Unless already in the train of answering questions, they will never reply straight off, but drop first into meditation.